Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayen. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. And we're reading this morning from chapter 8, of the first canto, text number 29. Sorry. It's similar. Naveda kaschit bhagavangsa chikirshitam. Tadeha manasya nrinam vidambanam. Nayasya kaschit dayatos tikarhichid. Dveshyasya chayasmin vishama matir nrinam. Naveda kaschit bhagavangs chakirshitam. Taveha manasya nrinam vidambanam. Nayasya kaschit dayatos tikarhichid. Dveshyascha yasmin vishama matir nrinam. Please chant. Naveda kaschit bhagavam shikirshitam. And that's vidam vinam banam. Nayasya kaschit dayatos tikarichid. Dveshascha yasmin vishamam dimitiram mam. Naveda kaschit bhagavan sikirshitam. Tave mananasya tinam kudam banam. Nayasya kaschit dayatos tikarichid. Dveshyascha yasmin vishamam dimitiram. Kaschit bhagavan shikirshitam. Devamanasya kudam binam banam. Nayasya kaschit dayato sikarhichit. Dreshastin min tamatirinam. Nabe kaschit bhagavan shikirshitam. Nayasya vidam banam banam. Nayasya kaschit dayato hikarichit. Nayasya yasmin vishamati dirsham. Naveda kaschit bhagavan chikirshitam. Manasya vidam banam banam. Yasya kaschit dayatos tikarichid. Dveshyascha yasmin mishama matir rinam. Okay, synonyms, please. We could read these together. Na does not, Veda, nu, kaschit, anyone, Bhagavan, O Lord, chikirshitam, pastimes, tava, your, ihamanasya, like the worldly men, Rinam, of the people in general. Yam, is fleeting. Na, never. Yasya, life. Tichit, anyone. Dayata, object of specific favor. Is karhichit, anywhere. Dvesya, object of envy. Cha, and yasmin, unto him. Vishama, partiality. Mati, conception. Rinam, of the people. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and are so misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. Please read the purport. Anybody like to start? Shrestha?
The Lord's mercy upon the fallen souls is equally distributed. He has no one as a specific object of hostility. The very conception of the personality of Godhead as a human being is misleading. His pastimes appear to be exactly like a human being's, but actually they are transcendental and without any tinge of material contamination. He is undoubtedly known as partial to his pure devotees, but in fact he is never partial, as much as the sun is never partial to anyone. By utilizing the sun rays, sometimes even the stones become valuable, whereas a blind man cannot see the sun, although there are enough sun rays before him. Darkness and light are two opposite conceptions, but this does not mean that the sun is partial in distributing its rays. The sun rays are open to everyone, but the capacities of the receptacles differ. Foolish people think that devotional service is flattering the Lord to get special mercy. Factually, the pure devotees who are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord are not a mercantile community. A mercantile house renders service to someone in exchange for values. The pure devotee does not render service unto the Lord for such exchange, and therefore the full mercy of the Lord is open for him.
Suffering and needy men, inquisitive persons, or philosophers make temporary connections with the Lord to serve a particular purpose. When the purpose is served, there is no more relation with the Lord. A suffering man, if he is pious at all, prays to the Lord for his recovery. But as soon as his recovery is over, in most cases the suffering man no longer cares to keep any connection with the Lord. The mercy of the Lord is open for him, but he is reluctant to receive it. That is the difference between a pure devotee and a mixed devotee. Those who are completely against the service of the Lord are considered to be in abject darkness. Those who ask for the Lord's favor only at the time of necessity are partial recipients of the Lord, of the mercy of the Lord, and those who are 100% engaged in the service of the Lord are full recipients of the mercy of the Lord. Such partiality in receiving the Lord's mercy is relative to the recipient and is not due to the partiality of the all-merciful Lord.
When the Lord descends on this material world by his all-merciful energy, he plays like a human being, and therefore it appears that the Lord is partial to his devotees only, but that is not a fact. Despite such apparent manifestation of partiality, his mercy is equally distributed. In the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all persons who died in the fight before the presence of the Lord got salvation without the necessary qualifications, because death before the presence of the Lord purifies the passing soul from the effects of all sins. And therefore, the dying man gets a place somewhere in the transcendental abode. Somehow or other, if someone puts himself open in the sun rays, he is sure to get the requisite benefit, both by heat and by ultraviolet rays. Therefore, the conclusion is that the Lord is never partial. It is wrong for the people in general to think of him as partial.
Brahmatirtha Prabhu's wife, Bhakti, used to come to the New York temple when he was becoming involved in Krishna consciousness, and she was not so interested. And every time she came, devotees would gather around her and tell her, "You're suffering. You're suffering in this world. Can't you see you're suffering?" And she said, "What's your problem?" You know? She didn't feel like she was suffering, and it didn't seem very pleasant to her to come somewhere where everyone was insisting that she was. So now she's a counselor and she sees everybody is suffering. but the The point Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport is how people in a suffering condition come to God, and when the suffering is over, then they forget about him. This is the natural tendency of the human being. So then he says that there are three kinds of people in this regard. Can anyone recount what they are? No. There's. That's right. So here is the reason why it appears that Krishna is partial. Just like in the verse that she's saying, Queen Kuti is saying, that it appears that your pastimes are ordinary, but that is your mystery. Krishna is just the reservoir of all contradictions. As Srila Prabhupada used to put it, all contradictions are resolved in the absolute truth. So who can think of one of Krishna's contradictions, one that we've been studying the last couple weeks in our verse of the week? One of Krishna's counterintuitive behaviors, apparently. Yes?
So. That even though creation is manifested from him, he's not in creation.
Yes. He manifests all the material elements, and yet he remains aloof. He mentions this in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. So it's contradictory. If you are creating something, you are part of it. You are certainly attached to it, but not in Krishna's case. So that's one of his contradictions. Anyone else can think of another contradictory thing about the Lord?
Killing a relative to achieve salvation.
Yes. Wouldn't that be nice if we all had that ability? By killing his relatives, they all achieve salvation. Whoever he kills, in fact, because they died in his presence, immediately finds some place, Prabhupada said, in the transcendental abode. Very good. So, what is the answer then to this contradiction? Is Krishna partial to his devotees, or is he equal to everybody? What is the answer?
Both.
That's right. He's both. So this point is a little subtle. I know some of you have heard it discussed sometimes, but let's just go through it again for anyone who may have not heard it. In the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu. I'm equal to everyone. Name Dweshta Stinapriya. I do not, this word Dweshta is used there also. I'm not envious of anybody. But if one renders service to me in love, I am a friend to him and he is a friend to me. So in the same verse, in the same sentence, he contradicts himself, right? I'm equal to everybody, I'm not partial to anyone, but if someone renders service, then I'm partial to him. So how is this contradiction actually, how is it possible for Krishna to be both at the same time? Can anyone explain? Yes, Prabhu.
An example could be like a father having two children. One of them just wants to enjoy runoff and do whatever he wants. And so Krishna will provide all the material creation to allow that. Mm-hmm. But if the other child wants to love and serve the father, then he'll become very favorable. But he still lets the children do what they want.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good answer, yes. In other words, Krishna's impartiality is that he reciprocates with everyone. What is that verse from the Bhagavad Gita in which he says, I reciprocate equally with everybody? Yeyatamam prapadnite dhaiva pajamyaham manu vanivartante. That's it?
Manusya
partha sarvasya. Right. So yes, he says that as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. All men follow my path in all respects. Not women, just men. No, everyone follows Krishna's path in all respects. And as they surrender, I reward them accordingly. So, like the sun, Prabhupada gives that example throughout the purport, the sun's equally distributing its rays to everyone. Some are able to receive them, some are not. And according to the receptacle, the ability of the person to receive, then Krishna's mercy is manifest in that person. He is giving everybody what they desire, just like Vaishnava said, just like the impartial father gives the children enough rope to hang themselves, as they say. Or, if they're very dutiful, then they give them all the estate. So, naturally, one will be a little partial to one, in this example, to one who's friendly. But beyond that, we can even see that the desire of the living entity is to enjoy without Krishna. Krishna fills that desire perfectly. And if the desire of the living entity is to love Krishna and serve Krishna, be in a relationship with Krishna, Krishna also fulfills that perfectly. So whatever the living entity desires, Krishna is there, ready, so impartial. Before Krishna consciousness, I never heard anything remotely like this about God. Have you? See, God was always a very judgmental person in my understanding. He liked this, he didn't like that. Thunderbolt is ready. You know, and so the natural extrapolation of that concept of God is that sometimes he's going to look like he's being very nice to us. And sometimes he's going to look like he's making us suffer like anything. Professor, we have a seat for you over here. This is the professor's seat. No, no, back there. No, no. So foolish people will think that God is making me suffer. And if it happens enough times, then people will give up the idea of God. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the communists coming into post-revolutionary Russia and saying, okay, pray to God for your bread. And they'd pray and nothing would happen. Now pray to us for your bread. And they'd pray and then big trucks would come up with bread. So in this way, they discourage people from any theism. See? So it's a natural conception to believe that if we are suffering, then God is punishing us. But in fact, in the previous verse, Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this destiny that is created by our own activities. So when a person acts, wants to be separate from Krishna, Krishna perfectly reciprocates and he's nowhere to be found because that's what the person wants. So then what happens to that individual? How is that person's happiness or distress determined?
Karma.
Yeah, by their karma, by the natural reactions of whatever they do. But once, if one time a person says, Krishna, please take me, I'm yours. Just somewhere in our heart, in the course of our life, we can turn to Krishna unconditionally one time, just once, and just ask him to please guide us, accept us, take over our lives. Even if we change our mind later, like the next minute, you know, or when things get better, Krishna never forgets that. So from that point on, Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion, whatever happens to a devotee is directly controlled by Krishna. Prior to that, indirectly, by the agency of the material energy. Just as that father may send the disobedient child to reform school. So now, turn him over. You take care of him. I can't handle him. He doesn't want anything to do with me. He's your responsibility now. That's the nature of the soul in the material energy. But when one time we turn to Krishna, if we can just say sincerely one time, Krishna, take me, I'm yours. Let's all say it. Krishna, take me, I'm yours. Now your life has changed forever. It's too late. Whatever happens then after that is Krishna's direct influence on the life of a devotee. But then why does a devotee go through hell sometimes? Right? Because Krishna is helping break the attachment that devotee has to the material world. That's it, plain and simple. So sometimes in the hospital, someone has a very serious disease. They're in intensive care. Other times they have, a broken finger. So the patients might complain to the doctor, why aren't you treating us equally? You're spending so much time with that person. Look at this finger. Look at it. But in fact, the amount of treatment needed by one person is not the same as another. So even if we all take up Krishna consciousness equally, some of us are going to be going through all sorts of purification and difficulties, you know, all sorts of financial problems. What are some of the manifestations of karma, of sinful reactions mentioned in the Nectar Devotion? Do you remember? Legal problems. Financial problems. Diseases. What is it?
Humiliation.
Yeah. Yeah, so many wonderful ways that Krishna shows his mercy. I remember once I went through a trauma in my life, and I said to my godbrother, Garuda Prabhu, I guess this is Krishna's mercy on me. And he said, you don't really mean that, do you? And I said, no. He was helping me understand, and this is where we're going to get to Valentina's question. He was helping me understand that when we're getting purified, if we have some motivation as a result of it, that's how Krishna is pushing us. See, we need to do something about it. So it's not that we just passively accept everything as Krishna's mercy, but when he's treating us, then we need to respond appropriately. See, that's the important lesson to learn from the suffering of a devotee. Therefore, in the later chapters of the cantos of the Bhagavatam, the Lord says, Tate nukam pam susamiksha mano bhujana evatma kritam vipakam tadvagvapurvir viditam namaste jivete yat mukti pade svadayabhak. That if a person does these things, if a devotee does these things, first of all, goes on suffering the reactions to past sinful activities, full responsibility, understanding whatever suffering I'm going through is a manifestation of my past foolish mistakes. Not that I'm getting the karma, but that Krishna is correcting me. That's the first thing. And secondly, continuing to pray to Krishna in the core of one's heart through all of the suffering. And then the third thing is what? Fully what?
Expecting the mercy of the
Lord. Expecting the mercy of the Lord. Generally, when people are going through a difficult time, they become very morose. But a devotee, by adoption of these three principles, is very hopeful, in a very positive mood. That, in other words, is a manifestation of a mature relationship with Krishna. I always expect Krishna's mercy. Nothing ever makes me feel like maybe Krishna isn't really there. See? Nothing that he can put me through can make me give up that faith. Ashlishyava padavratam panashtu mam adarshanam marmahatam karotuva. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my dear Lord, you may handle me roughly by your embrace. You may trample me beneath your feet, or you may even make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. That's where a lot of people lose their faith in God. If God exists, let him show himself. I'm waiting. Come on. Must not be there. See, so why should God take the trouble to show himself to us if we're skeptical about him? We're skeptical about him, he's skeptical about us. You know, why should he show himself to a skeptic? Because if you, like one of our business partners used to say, remember Jita, what was his name? Ephraim Close. The more you do for people, the less they appreciate you. Right? And so if God were just to reveal himself at somebody's casual whim, they say, yeah, okay. that won't have the same effect, the desired effect. So therefore, the devotee prays, Jagannath Swami Nayanapatagami Bhava to me, please be visible to me. Please be visible to me. Hiranmayena Patrina, please remove this glowing effulgence of Brahman that's just covering your real existence. When our relationship with Krishna matures, then we always know that he's there for us. He's all-powerful, he's all-merciful, and he's all-knowing. So what a great friend to have. It's not that when we suffer, Krishna has somehow forgotten to check our web page today. He's somehow allowing something unwanted to happen. No, it's directly controlled by Krishna. So in this material world, we have so many obstacles. But before I go into Valentina's question, I just want to ask, any questions on this background philosophy?
He comes in and then he takes our life from then on. It kind of sounds to me that we kind of forego our free will. Because then at what point can we still choose not to? Like, okay, Krishna, I changed my mind. I don't want you in it. But he's still there. So have we lost our free will?
Have we lost our free will once we surrender to Krishna?
Right.
No, we can always backtrack, but it will never be in the ignorance it was before. See, so Krishna, yes, if we, and that happens practically. People take up Krishna consciousness and they say, I don't like that temple president. So they go away and then they still have a very hard time really forgetting Krishna. As Narada Muni puts it, you can only imitate the fruitive workers. Having tasted the nectar of devotional service, one can only imitate the fruitive workers. Jagannath, would you like to?
I just had a question.
Use the mic so they can hear you in the kitchen.
So we're talking a lot about how devotees, they will suffer even after becoming devotees. And it's, you know, framing that properly. And so we say that when a person is initiated, the guru takes all their karma. So how do we juxtapose those two ideas? How is it that there, on one hand, you have no suffering left, but on the other hand, you're suffering? Mm-hmm. Just
that's a very good question that you have cooked up.
I'll be in the kitchen.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, so when we get initiated, ostensibly, one's karma all goes to the spiritual master. So then why is one suffering? One should now be free to enjoy. And the answer to that is that Krishna is giving the proper medicine for that conditioned soul. What does the spiritual master do with our karma? Does he file it under your name? And
he burns it.
How?
By engaging in devotional service himself, he destroys all that karma.
Yes. It's offered to Krishna. What did Prahlad do when he was given poison by Hiranyakashipu? To eat poison food, poison lunch, prasad. Yeah, he offered it to Krishna. And then Krishna accepted that. That's the point of the spiritual master, that whatever sins we have committed, by the mercy of the spiritual master, those sins are offered to Krishna. See? In the Gita, Krishna says, sarva dharmam paricchaya mam ekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarva papibhya. Don't worry, I will take all your sinful reactions. So it's not that the spiritual master takes them, but Krishna takes them through the agency of the spiritual master. But then why still suffering? Because, again, that's the treatment that we need for the attachments that we retain. It's not expected that when we are initiated, then we are immediately perfect. But initiation means beginning. This is a beginning of commitment to travel the path of perfection. So that takes some time. That takes some time, and it can't be rushed. And on the course of that path, then we have to undergo many tests. And the reason we go through those tests is because Krishna is rather selective about his association. He doesn't let just anyone come in the spiritual world to be in his entourage, in his intimate company, who is only casually committed to his devotional service. That position is for those who have been through all of the trials and tests. It's very similar to the academic procedures, right? You have to go through your high school to get into your college and your undergraduate to get to your master's to get to your PhD. So the process of Krishna consciousness is like that, and there's no way to really shortcut it. Practically, that means most of us will go through some very heavy trials in our lives at some point or another. How do we respond to them? If we can take them without losing faith in Krishna, we pass that test. And then we go on to the next one. So is that because the spiritual master didn't take our sins? No, it's because that is the process of purification.
You said sometimes people can backtrack in Krishna consciousness, but they're never in the same ignorance. They can't actually forget Krishna. What if someone just declares, I have no faith in Krishna? Like, they've had so much suffering in their life. They've become a devotee, and then they've had so much suffering that they just say, I have no faith in Krishna, and they sort of feel really bad about him or something like that. Uh-huh.
They feel like they've wasted their time. The only thing that can undo that permanent advancement is the hati mata, the Vaishnava aparad, to offend the pure devotees. So that can undo one's spiritual advancement. It rarely happens, but it does happen.
Okay, and after initiation, if one commits sins, does the guru continue to take that?
Yes, what that means is that the guru has accepted an unqualified disciple, and there's been a lack of proper discrimination and preparation on both sides. So one does not really know one well enough to make the commitment to the relationship. So yes, it's like offering improperly cooked food to the deity. See, one did not do his due diligence. Well, there is a contract, an agreement between the guru and disciple at the time of initiation. If the disciple keeps their vows, then the spiritual master will take responsibility for connecting them with Krishna. Now, what happens if the disciple breaks those vows? Well, there is definitely some reaction for the spiritual master, but at some point, then the contract is broken. See, but the idea is that the spiritual master is very kind, and even if one falls down, if there's the slightest bit of sincerity, the spiritual master will keep trying to rectify that disciple. There was one disciple who Prabhupada sent away, or actually a couple, but this one particularly notable case was a disciple who had been editing his books for a long time, very scholarly. And he became influenced by one of Prabhupada's godbrothers that, in a way that was essentially offensive. So because he accepted that and began treating Prabhupada in a certain relative way, Prabhupada said that he should leave the Association of Devotees. But Brahmatirtha Prabhu tells a story that everybody knows that part of it. And Prabhupada sent him away. But what they don't know is that Prabhupada later asked Brahmatirtha to go down and go and find him and bring him back. So Brahmatirtha found him. He was at the train station, but he didn't want to come back. So Krishna is like that. You see, if we approach him sincerely at one point, then he always remembers that. And even if we have to wait for some time before we can complete the process, it's very hard to break. Go ahead, Prabhuji.
Can you explain when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that everyone follows my path in all respects?
Yes, that everybody is getting what they have by his input, whether it's materially or spiritually. If somebody is so foolish as to approach God and ask for material things, then they get it by his grace. You know, they're not creating that wealth. It's not that they're actually doing anything. Prabhupada was once talking with they brought a big industrialist to visit him in Mayapur. This man was very wealthy, and he was walking with Prabhupada and his disciples on a morning walk. So Prabhupada asked him, so what is your business? He said, I manufacture glass. Oh, and where do you get the, and how is glass made? It's made from sand, Swamiji. And where do you get the sand? From Krishna. Oh, so you are a thief. The man was embarrassed. Everybody laughed. And then one of the devotees who had brought him began speaking up on his behalf. He said, well, Prabhupada, this man, he helps us with our temple. And so Prabhupada said, oh, so you're just a little thief. No matter what, we're all on the spiritual path. No, that isn't necessarily true. No, we are all eternal spiritual entities. So in that sense, we're all on the spiritual path. But some of us are, by our desires, maintaining Gainesville and North Central Florida and the material world. You know, yate dam dar yate jagat. Because we have desires that are separate from our Creator, therefore the material world exists for us to enjoy. Or try to enjoy. So yes, that is a service, you could say. And the very advanced devotees see everybody as engaging in Krishna service, even if they're doing so indirectly. But for the Madhyama, for the middle devotee, it's important to have the discrimination, to be able to say this is materialism and this is spirituality. Damodar?
It's said that the holy name of the Lord is his most merciful form, because he'll appear even on the tongue of a completely unqualified person. So also sometimes we see that Harinam initiation into the chanting of the holy name, the first initiation is given very liberally. And a lot of people turn out not to be qualified. So I was wondering if that's because the holy name is so merciful that it's given very liberally, or some other consideration.
Again, these are very individual questions. It's really a matter between guru and disciple as far as when is initiation appropriate. But and some people have more liberal approaches to giving first initiation and more conservative towards second. Some people require you to wait years to get first initiation to test your sincerity. So that's all very individual. There's no hard and fast rules. Because it's a relationship, that's the thing. It's not a formality, but it's a relationship. Okay, anything else on these points, Ras Rush?
You briefly mentioned this point about the importance of our response to these different purificatory things that happen in our lives, that we can't just sit and take Krishna's mercy passively. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, I mean, I know it's, depending on the type of purification, that response is going to vary. But like for myself, in certain circumstances, when I'm getting purified, I feel like there's nothing I can really do. Like anything I try to do to kind of mitigate the situation just makes it worse. Just kind of have to like, is that being passive about it, to just kind of let it go? Or I just wonder if you could speak a little bit about that.
We should have some direction. Okay, we must have some direction. It's said in the Bible that without vision, the people perish. So similarly, if we are not able to see past the suffering that we're going through, then we will become overwhelmed by it. So in order to get that, we need guidance from senior, more experienced people. So that is in and of itself is a dynamic response to suffering. To get guidance, to seek guidance, to express ourselves, and say, how should I handle this? What should I do? So very often the cure is a real long-term process, and it doesn't bring immediate gratification. But at least if we have something to work for and some progressive action to take, then there's relief. That relief gradually increases as we develop the alternative direction. Damodar?
Thanks for letting me make a second question. I was wondering if you could expand on the meaning of But you said that the more you do for people, the less they appreciate you.
Yes.
I mean, immediately it's like, oh, well, then why will I do anything for anyone?
That's
but then
right.
You think, well, you know, the goal is to please Krishna, not to get people to like me. But
right.
I mean, how does that translate into behavior?
Okay, this is not a quote from Shastra. It is a quote from an advanced materialist. But it reflects something inherent in human nature, that if we are too giving, then people will begin to take us for granted. So there should be some discretion. And we can read about Lord Chaitanya and the Panchatattva breaking open the storehouse of love of God and giving it to everyone, regardless of qualification. And the more they distributed, the more the supply increased. So that aphorism applies to material considerations. But it is a truism in relationships if there is not appropriate reciprocation. One of the qualities of the Kanishta or the beginning devotee is they can't discriminate. So they might give, and this practically happens a lot. People first come to Krishna consciousness, they think everybody's so advanced. See? And as a result, they may be in a position to be exploited, or they may be giving more credentials to somebody, more respect to somebody than they really deserve. And then when that person disappoints them, they can become very discouraged about Krishna consciousness in general. You see? So part of growing up as a devotee means to be able to recognize actual advancement and to invest ourselves in relationships with those people and not in those who cannot properly respond. Okay, so that makes sense. So there's, again, simultaneously lack of discrimination and careful discrimination. Like for the non-devotees, we'll give Krishna consciousness indiscriminately. Let's use Krishna lunch as an example. There is, there's a certain number of people who will come up and say, I've heard this is a donation. So, I mean, once a week or once a month, somebody will come up and just say, yeah, it's a donation. I don't want to give a donation. So I want lunch anyway. So our response to that is what? That's one response, right? Usually we say, go to hell, but we're feeling nice to say. Well, in difficult cases, what's one tactic you can always fall back on? Well, I was going for something more practical, less painful. No, you use an open-ended question. So if somebody says that, you can respond by saying, well, what is it about our program that you don't appreciate? Or you can say, how do you feel about letting everyone else around here pay for your lunch? See, in this way, you put it back on them. We never turn anyone away. But the point is that we expect reciprocation. So, yeah, if somebody is not reciprocating appropriately, then we reciprocate in a different way. It's not all one. Yayatam mam prapadyate. As they surrender, I reward them accordingly. So, we can ask them to do service. And one time I had a young man come, and he was a convinced member of another faith. And he was really upset that we were there. So he said, I don't want to pay. And I said, so what is it about our program you don't appreciate? And he said, I just don't want to pay. And I said, you want to eat, but you don't want to pay. And he said, yeah, that's right. All right. So I gave him a plate, but then I followed him, and he went over to Turlington Plaza. And there he met up with a couple of his fellow believers, and he put the plate in the trash. And they were chuckling about how they had messed with the Krishnas. So I went up to him, and I said, do you really think that the founder of your religion would do this? And he was embarrassed. So in fact, he brought me a gift card for Crisper's restaurant the next day. So the point is, we try to reciprocate appropriately with everyone and don't just give indiscriminately to unqualified people. Okay, that's the application of that rather cynical remark to Krishna consciousness. Okay. So what about Valentina's very intelligent question? What's the difference between a low self-esteem and humility? Can anyone venture an answer for that?
Low self-esteem, one thinks that
thank you.
Worthless.
That there's nothing I can do, you know, just... But you're seeing yourself like separate from Krishna, because if you're truly humble, then some of these feelings might appear, but you see yourself in relationship to Krishna. Mm-hmm. That like whatever I'm doing, whatever things I can do, in comparison to Krishna, they're insignificant, but at the same time, you're completely empowered by Krishna to do things.
That's a good answer. In other words, the answer is Krishna is the difference. Low self-esteem is me-centered. Humility is Krishna-centered. So... we cannot imitate humility, but we can act in a humble way. What does that mean? To act in a humble way means to render service to our Creator. That's automatically humble. And just to feel that we are unqualified without reference to Krishna, that is known as low self-esteem, it's actually a very self-centered position. Gopal, I'm going to interrupt my train for you here.
Sorry. I asked the same question one time. The answer I got was low self-esteem means that you can't do your service.
Low self-esteem means that you can't do your service. Yeah, that's a good practical point. We were in Jacksonville last week. I saw a billboard or something that said, if you're too wrapped up in yourself, you're overdressed. I thought that was... that is the difference. In other words, low self-esteem is humility without Krishna. And so it's actually not real humility. Just for example, Arjuna, in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, would you say he's suffering from low self-esteem? He doesn't know what to do. I can't. I'm helpless. Right? Either way, I'm condemned. See, everything looked very dark and miserable. So then what did he do? He, karpanya dosho pahata svabhava. Now I am shishyasteham sadimam tvam kripanam. Now I'm a disciple. Now I'm your student. Please instruct me. So, it's a given that we're all really unqualified. We're lower than worms in stool, et cetera, in this material world. So I'm no good. Thesis, antithesis, Krishna is wonderful. Then synthesis, I'm no good, but Krishna is really wonderful. So if the scale is more like I'm no good, and Krishna's all right, as opposed to I'm no good, but Krishna is really wonderful, then what happens is our ability to see how fallen we are becomes more and more sharply focused. That's why we read these prayers by the acharyas, that, like we read a bhajan by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he says, Krishna, you're so merciful, and as far as I'm concerned, if somebody's suffering, I'm happy, and if somebody's happy, I'm unhappy. This is my condition. He makes many statements like this, very profound, heartbreaking humility, because you see really how fallen we are. So, to see how fallen we are, it doesn't mean we have to act fallen, but it chastens us. If we're really remorseful about something, we actually change our behavior. Right? That's humility. Low self-esteem means I don't really want to change my behavior. I would like someone to come and change it for me. So, as one person put it, humility is not to think less of yourself, it's to think of yourself less. So thinking more about Krishna. Yes, I'm fallen. Okay, it's understood. Anyway, Krishna, here I am. I'm your burnt offering today. You take me because I'm here on the altar. You have to accept. That may sound a little non-devotional, but it's reality. Because some days we're really on top of it, and some days we're not. Some days we're very blissful in Krishna consciousness. Some days we're depressed. But every day we have to offer ourselves to Krishna. And the more we do that, the more steady we become, so that these issues about how advanced I am, how unadvanced I am, how pretty I am, how ugly I am, how rich I am, how poor, they just become insignificant. Whatever I am, Krishna, take me, I'm yours. Here I am today. I'm in your hands, so you can treat me this way or that way. That's up to you. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. Like that. That is the antithesis of, or that is really the synthesis of low self-esteem and loving Krishna. We don't think, like Prabhupada once responded, a disciple said, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. He said, you're not the most anything. Simply insignificant. Was that him? So, okay, I hope that answers your question. Go ahead.
That you said was the proactive actions. It actually connects to the first part of the lecture, which is surrendering in a proactive way. Also, in this way, you make some change if you really are feeling like you're acting with something.
Yes. Yes, or just give up trying, which was Arjuna's approach.
Surrendering.
Yeah. All right, I'm down, but I'm going to get up and now try in a different way. Yes. Vaishnava, can you pass the mic, please? Shane, could you handle it?
From my experience, low self-esteem can be a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not have anything to do with humility at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you are not able to do as well as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember I was working with a professor and I was going in circles, not really progressing at all. He used to ask me to do something, I used to do it, go back and just used to keep forgetting what he asked last week, and I was not really progressing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really under stress, what's really going on? Maybe mm-hmm. I'm not good enough or something.
Mm.
We were sitting one day for like an hour to find a factor of two somewhere. He actually made a mistake. I did it right. Then I realized I spent an hour to find this factor of two in this my whole analysis. I will never do a complete PhD under him. It's not going to happen. And I was really low self-esteem, but I changed professors, produced some good results, went to some conferences, and it gave me confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe improving yourself, maybe it has nothing to do with spirituality at all. Just trying to improve yourself, trying to do things in a better way, trying to improve. Sometimes we give Krishna consciousness as an excuse of not doing things.
At least I'm a devotee.
I'm a devotee, so everything is
fine. I'm flunking out, but I'm a devotee.
Yeah. And not doing well in your exam, not doing well in your classes, not doing well in your work. I mean, not overdoing it, but at least doing it until you feel satisfied. There should be a balance and not a lame hand-waving excuse.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying. The point is that everybody should be engaged in a service which is appropriate to their nature so that they can feel satisfied and be fulfilled. And that's very individual for each person. See? So if we are pursuing some kind of service, or some kind of career, and not doing well in it, then again, we should get some guidance. And we should see, is this actually the right thing for me to be doing? See? So it very much has to do with spirituality. In other words, this is a holistic life, Krishna consciousness. It's not that I have this compartment for my Krishna consciousness and this compartment for reality.
I'm not trying to say that. It's easier for some people to be a grihastha,
yes,
in spirituality. It's easier for someone to be brahmachari.
Yes.
Similarly, it's easier to beings, let's say, do PhD for Krishna consciousness and do, let's say, industrial job to be. So it's certainly it depends. But this certain this section this experience of having low self-esteem has to do with something to improve ourselves, to do well in the present situation.
If we're feeling things like that, some negative feelings about ourselves, we should get consultation because we have faith that Krishna would not neglect us. So for some reason, I'm not feeling enthusiastic about my service or about my chosen profession. This is right out of chapter 1 of Bhagavad Gita.
That I agree. I mean, I didn't get my second professor because it just happened. Because of Krishna's grace, yeah. I made emailed 20 people and I got 3 responses back and only one accepted. It was because of Krishna's grace only, but I actually endeavored from my part.
Yes, of course. So yeah, to depend on Krishna doesn't mean that we don't endeavor.
Yeah.
But it means that, what you're saying, if for you getting a PhD is appropriate, for somebody else getting a industrial job is appropriate. Okay, these different people will have different natures and different inclinations. The test is not PhD versus industrial job, 6 figures versus 4 figures. You know that the test is somebody able to progress through their life and go back to Godhead. That is really what is a measure of human happiness. Are we on a progressive, methodical path? Are we appropriately engaged in the right ashram, in the right varna, so that we can get up early each morning, chant 16 rounds, peacefully follow the 4 regulative principles, and that way every day come one step closer to leaving the material world altogether? See, for some people that will mean PhD. For some people that will mean industrial. For some people that will mean making garlands. For some people, it will be some very simple thing. It's all a matter of the individual relationship of the soul and Krishna. So we need guidance to help determine what that is. That's my point. And so you were feeling low self-esteem, having trouble in school. I think they're having trouble in the kitchen also. Please don't. Are we having low self-esteem issues in the kitchen?
Probably. Steam is fine.
The steam is fine. If we're discouraged, this is Maya. Okay. If we remain discouraged, that means there's something wrong with our spiritual life. We have to make an adjustment. See, that's my point. There's no place for remaining in the mode of ignorance or, you know, remaining very wrapped up in ourselves or depressed. We get depressed, we get wrapped up in ourselves, but then we need to do something about it. Okay, does that make sense?
Krishna says that if you renounce something because it's difficult, then it's in mode of ignorance.
Ignorance or passion, but that would mean to do so independently. See? I've seen many devotees just trying hard to go through school, for example, when they really have no inclination, but they're trying hard to do it because they think that's the only way to economic development. But in fact, there are many other ways to economic development also that might be more exciting. I have one friend who made millions of dollars as an entrepreneur, and he dropped out of school in 8th grade. I said, "Do you have any regrets?" He said, "Yeah, I wish I'd dropped out in 7th grade." All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.